Today I want to talk about afraid to engage. Making anything happen requires engagement. We have to be willing to connect our energy with other energy patterns, whether they are matter or solid objects, energy which are unsolid objects such as ideas, images, concepts, thoughts, and emotions. We will engage in space. The space may be physical space, the physical area like a room, playing field, a business environment, or an office or a conference room. The space can be only in our minds as we engage with the ideas, images, and even visions of that which we want to manifest. In the engagement, we will invest a certain amount of time to say or hint that we want to engage, but then not schedule the time to do it, means we have not really decided to engage. Engagement could be visualized as the act of entangling our energies with other energies in order to learn and to cause desirable results. After the engagement, or entanglement, we pull back physically and or mentally and or emotionally, and we review what just happened during that particular engagement. Done effectively, we learn from that energy exchange experience. We will either adjust our actions or continue them. If the goal of the engagement remains strong and clear to us, we won't easily quit the engagement process. All creation is the result of engagement. It's easy to overlook this fact because we tend to only see the physical actions and not the underlying principles involved. That makes a bit of sense, maybe a lot of sense, because focusing on the principles can complicate the thinking of a person trying to take action. A child doesn't need to know it is engaging with gravity, its own center of gravity, its musculature, and sense of balance when it stands up for the very first time or starts taking its first steps. As an adult, it can be helpful to know the factors involved in engagement. I watched a professional basketball game recently, and I watched an NCAA basketball tournament game in March. I was particularly interested in the playing of an unheralded college team from Baltimore, which shocked another well-respected basketball team. In the next game, the team from Baltimore lost. It was obvious when they missed shots, they were exhausted because the shots they were shooting were consistently falling short of the basket. Because that team had not been expected and had not expected themselves to advance, they only had a single uniform per player. They had to wash their own uniforms. And because they were the Cinderella team, every sports writer wanted to interview each one of them repetitively. Then add in the excitement and the players' exhaustion was understandable. But the team's management, the coach and his staff, failed to engage procedures to protect the energy of the players. Even with these problems, the college team from Baltimore almost won that second game. I could say the players were over-engaged in activities not directly related to them playing basketball at the highest level. I could also say the coaching staff was under-engaged in protecting the players' energy. Think of this possibility. We are all bags of energy patterns, having our own everyday experiences in life. We connect, that is, engage, with some things and avoid connecting with others. Now consider the headlines you've seen in the last year about certain of those bags exploding and hurting the self and others. What happened to the energies within the bags that caused the intensification to the point of needing to and wanting to massacre innocent people? Did these people not get engaged with normal people, with whom the interactions normalized and balanced their energies? Or did they engage only with people whose imbalances exacerbated their own imbalances? Recently I saw an article that said loneliness is more dangerous to health than smoking cigarettes. Loneliness in marriage is said to be a big problem for the people who are still in the marriage. There are ways to engage. That means there are ways to be afraid to engage. even the word engage may have special meaning for you, as it does for me. As I was being made to learn how to drive a manual transmission Volkswagen when I was 12 years old, I was told to gently engage the clutch as I shifted gears. Using my hands and my feet to engage makes sense in this case. I took dance lessons in elementary school. I engage my feet, or at least I tried to, as I listened to the beat of the music. In this case, I engaged my hearing. Looking at situations physically in front of us or in the thoughts and imagination are engagement. I engaged in fistfights starting at 11 years old on a regular basis, in school and after school. I engaged in bragging. I engaged in lying. I engaged in taunting other kids. I engaged in underage drinking and smoking and sex. I engaged in sports and work and occasionally in studying. Only occasionally. Certainly and unfortunately, I engaged in being bad-tempered and defiant. Despite all these forms of engagement, the pain of some of them leave wounds that remain open, leading to us to being afraid to engage. For me personally, I was about 4 years old when I engaged with a hatchet. That was painful. I picked it up in my left hand and hit my right hand with a hatchet. I'm right-handed. Picking up a hatchet with your wrong hand, not a good idea at 4 years old. I probably like working with ideas and not my hands, partially because of that experience of engagement with the hatchet. This brings up the consequences of engaging in an activity before we are ready. We can be unready mentally and emotionally and physically. When I was training in the Colombian military school, La Escuela de Lanceros, the ability to swim was a requirement. However, a couple of Colombian army officers showed up unable to swim. They were forced to jump into the pool and learn how to swim in order not to drown. It was horrifying to watch. One guy tried and tried and was forced back into the deep water that was over his head repeatedly. He would sink, and then the very tall corporal would pull him out and hold him a little bit and then let him go again. And this was repeated until finally an ambulance ended up taking him back to the barracks with a hernia. He escaped La Escuela with his injury. That form of engagement was way too severe. No one is going to become an accomplished swimmer in 5 days of exhausting training in a swimming pool. It is the gradual engagement that is the basis of a successful engagement. Can you imagine the pain that would be inflicted on a small child just learning to walk if we insisted that the child run a mile right then? Baby steps are not a bad thing. They are a good thing. Children engage. I recently told a friend she could bring her young son with her to my house. She said, "Oh no, he touches everything. Nothing would be safe." I have a feeling that this pattern is more common in boys than in girls. Years ago, Marianne and I babysat 2 grandchildren in Las Vegas. Zachary, about 5 years old, had walked around the fenced-in yard and disassembled every solar light that his parents had placed in the yard. He just took each lamp apart and left the pieces in a pile and moved on to do the same thing with the next light. The next day we had gone to a furniture refinishing location in an industrial area. Standing there, Zachary started pulling on the handles of a large dumpster-like container, almost as if he was trying to figure it out and take it apart, just like he had done the day before with the lights. Childproofing a home is because people recognize that children, in order to learn and understand, will engage with everything and anything that they can reach. Being afraid to engage, which children have not yet learned, is due to the fear of failure. And once they learn it, and we say, "Start this, Oh, no, no, I'm afraid to fail. You can learn this. No, no, I'm afraid to fail. Being afraid to engage can be directly connected to the feelings of vulnerability that accompany feelings of uncertainty. To some degree, in certain circumstances, we like uncertainty. Think of a detective story or a mystery or even, for some people, horror movies. If you knew the outcome and how it was going to show up, you wouldn't be interested in the stories or the movies. On the other hand, we don't typically like uncertainty if it can result in pain for us. If the uncertainty means our needs are at risk, we won't like uncertainty. However, the person who can tolerate more uncertainty and ambiguity is more likely to be willing to engage. They would have a level of confidence and trust that they would be able to adjust sufficiently to protect and fulfill their own needs, and perhaps the needs of others. Another risk of engagement is the question of how we will react in any given situation. If we're not confident in our ability to maintain emotional control of ourselves, then we can end up fearing our own reactions and behaviors. We may fear that we'll go off the wall. We will overreact to something. We fear that we could end up hurting ourselves through our actions. In essence, we are afraid to engage our own emotions. Being afraid to engage, as I mentioned, can be directly connected to uncertainty. I don't know what will happen is a common thought, and by extension, if I don't know what will happen, I don't know how I will feel and react, and that scares me. While we may not know what will happen in unknown situations, we may be able to lessen the uncertainty by identifying the probabilities. Probabilities are those things that probably could occur, and if they do, this is how I would respond. This would be like having a game plan that if X occurs, you will respond with Y. This is very common. Think of sports. It happens every single play, no matter what sport is being played, and it's common in life as well. When I was new to the field sales on Long Island, I had to drive considerable distances and time between appointments. In the very first days after driving through traffic, I got to my appointment, and the business owner was not there. I was stood up. I went back to my car very angry. As I sat in my car fuming, I realized, I've got to figure out a way to handle these occurrences because this is going to happen again. I've got to come up with something other than righteous anger and being pissed off. So I came up with a game plan. Besides confirming the appointment before, the day before, I reconfirmed on the morning of the day of the appointment. And then I considered the probabilities. The client could see me, but not listen. Client would see me and listen to me, as I explained advertising possibilities for him. The client would not be there or be too busy to see me. The client would try to cancel all the advertising without listening to me, and the client would say, let's just keep everything the same, because he didn't want to take the time to listen and interact or engage with me. So what I did, because I knew those possibilities or probabilities could occur, I pre-planned other clients in the area or between the area of that first appointment and the next appointment. And if I were stood up, I had some place to go. If I thoroughly studied and planned for the call, my will and purpose would turn the call into a meaningful engagement. And I noticed if I hadn't planned enough, my will and purpose were weaker and I was less authoritative, so I could be pushed off or put off. The real benefit is I didn't get angry as hell. I rolled with the punches, as the saying goes. And I stayed mentally and emotionally balanced so that I could continue my day's activity and remain effective. If you watch a baseball game on television, as I do, you'll see the engagement of the pitcher and the hitter. The hitter is trying to identify which pitches will be thrown and what order, and the pitcher is trying to mix up his pitches so the batter will be fooled by what is being thrown. This type of engagement is the very foundation of all team sports and maybe all sports in general. What will the other team, the other player, the wind, the contour of the green on the golf course do? How should I react? Maybe the first order of business with an engagement is to decide on who, what, when, where, and how of that engagement. So you've identified in that case the matter, the energy, the space, and the time of the engagement. The next step is to recognize that the other person is a bundle of rules trying to meet his or her needs, and that your energy field can directly affect how that other person reacts to your energy exchange. The third step could be for you to list in your mind or on a piece of paper what probable responses there could be to your attempt at engagement. It could be accepted wholeheartedly. You could be embraced. It could be accepted tentatively with doubt or skepticism, where that other person is uncertain about your intentions. You could be rejected directly. Your attempt at engagement could be misunderstood. It could be not heard. Or it could be perceived as a threat because you're approaching somebody else's energy field and maybe their boundaries or their fears of engagement are far higher than yours are at that moment. And there may be, could be more of these probabilities. That is why you want to set your intention for this engagement. Abraham of Abraham Hicks talks about segment intending as a principle, where you set your intention before you engage in the activity in a certain time period. It is a fantastically helpful concept. It helps to intend to be kind, respectful, appreciative, helpful, empowering, validating, etc. That information, that energy, is communicated to others. They're picking it up by observing you. They're picking it up subconsciously. And it would be difficult for anybody to process those energies as threats. The idea that we live a life that is projected outward makes sense to me. Perception and then projection of those perceptions may be what we do before, during, and after engagements. The statement that most of us won't admit is, it's all about me, it's all about me. That is true, in my experience. Most of us are primarily focused on ourselves. Instead of focusing and observing that which are external to us, we are focused and observing and reacting to our own thoughts, feelings, and self-talk. Rather than looking at situations as puzzles or mysteries that are fun and challenging to solve, we gauge our vulnerability that we just projected into those situations. One of the first reactions that people have when presented with a new situation or a new possible action is a blurt out, no! That is normal self-protective mechanism at work. When in doubt, say no. Unless the mentioned activity is a regular occurrence, saying no is the safest default reaction. Because of the uncertainty attached to the new activity, there is a deeper fear driving the no, and it is the belief and fear that I can't do it. You don't have to protect yourself from doing things that you know you can easily do. It is the group of things you fear you can't do that you instinctively must protect yourself from. If we could just walk away from engagements whenever we're afraid of them, there would be no building up of stress or anxiety. But that's not what happens. We crave engagement. We crave connection, closeness, contact, intimacy. These are demands that we must deal with. Add to those demands our own desires and aspirations, the things we want to be and do and have. When we both want to engage and are afraid to engage, we have problems that require solutions. We want health, success, prosperity, happiness, and love, but they require engagement. There is no magic words or elixirs that create those conditions. Each of those five words is a journey rather than a destination. As such, what steps do you have to engage with to start the journeys? And the first step is not resolved by someone showing up with a cure for your disease, an idea that can generate millions of dollars, a rich uncle unknown to you dying and leaving his fortune to you, or a prince or princess charming riding up on a white horse or discovering you at the royal ball. No, no. The change to your fears of engagement will happen as your consciousness, mindset, and attitudes change to include who and what you really are and the source of support available to you in your journey of change and elevation. That, to me, is the only way to deal with the fear and being afraid to engage. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Think of the support we have as we get ready to engage. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.